Things are looking good for the Oilers. They could look great by tonight, say 11:30 midnight. A win could indicate a shorter than expected series against Los Angeles. It's all about attrition, and everybody else is beating each other up. You have to love this if you're an Oilers fan. Welcome to the Lowdown, driven by Wolf GMC Buick. Truck Month continues in April. Deep discounts on remaining 2023 Sierras and Costco members saving on select Buick and GMC SUVs. Visit wolfgmcbuick.com or check them out, corner of 184th Street and Stony Plain Road. Lots to get to today. And it was a wild night in the NHL last night. Suspect it'll be the same tonight. We're on Twitter at Low Tide and at Declan Kruger. Sports1440.ca, iHeartRadio, Radio Player Canada, On the Radio, Apple and Spotify podcast. We tweet it out on X, and we exit out on tweet. We do it all. Text or call us 1-833-401-1440. 833-401-1440. Our guest today, Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey at the Edmonton Journal, Dennis Bernstein from the Fourth Period, and Duncan with Declan. Also, Declan with Duncan. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We got two features on that today. I haven't heard any typing, but I see his hands over there moving as if, I don't know, somehow not connected. Is that you, Declan Kruger?
That's me, sir. I was typing, actually. You didn't hear that?
No, I think it's because I'm louder this week. Somehow in my headphones, I'm getting a cold.
It feels like you're yelling, I'll tell you.
Is that what it feels like?
The first thing I did when I got in here was I turned down the volume in my headphones.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm
going to
do it
sorry.
Again, actually. Hold on. There we go. That's better.
How about this? Welcome to the Lowdown.
Whoa.
On today's show, we're going to just mutter, mumble, and barely squeak.
You know, that's... If I didn't know any better, I would say that was a damn near sexy voice.
I'm not going to go that far,
but
I do not have one.
If I didn't know any better, I might.
I do not have one.
You know, unfortunately, I know you day in, day out, so I know that's not a thing, but
no,
if I didn't.
I don't have, and I certainly, if I did have one, I wouldn't use it on you.
I would hope not.
Okay.
Although the HR payout would be generational if you did.
Doctor.
My goodness.
Can you imagine that meeting?
You wouldn't be in it. It would be me and a teddy bear.
No, I'd be wrapped in foam and, you know. Yeah. Drop down from a long, 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 long height.
We're off to a terrible start.
Well, it's because of you. I was going fine.
It really
and then
was.
You came in and derailed
really
the
was.
Entire show. Anything NBA right at the top before we get into the Oilers? Anything NBA that was worthy of talking about that has occurred? They play again in June, right?
Yeah. I would say Luka is on pace to have a historic playoff run. If Dallas wins that series, it's going to be on the back of him. Like you mentioned, we have Duncan with Declan coming up. Indiana won last night. I think Indiana, despite the bloat in game one, is more than capable of winning this series, more so now than ever. And of course, the Heat play today. I'm just going to have to take that one on the chin. Game two, going to be another big loss. It is what it is. We're going to play them tough. We're going to play them hard. We're going to, you know, we'll probably get 22 points out of someone we don't expect. Haywood Highsmith, you know, maybe Dillon Wright, whatever it is. But that series is over. But as we move on, things will start to clear up a little bit, and we'll get some answers,
look
if you will.
Look forward to Duncan with Declan at 1:40 today. Okay. I want to talk today about attrition and what it does to teams in the National Hockey League. Everybody talks about, oh, we've got the depth. But then it's like Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. And that's kind of what is happening in the early part of these opening series. Guys aren't showing up. They're playing shy. Injured guys aren't coming back like you'd want them to, and you're losing hockey games. All of those are things you don't want to see, but inevitably occur. So, like, as an example, last night in the National Hockey League, the Capitals are done. Like, they scored three goals. They got close. That's as good as they're going to get. Absolutely. Rangers are way better. The Panthers versus Lightning, they won in overtime. That's really an interesting result. I don't think that Lightning are going to go away in 5 seconds, but winning in that game, huge for the Panthers, and everybody expects them to go deep. The Avalanche beat the Jets 5-2, and that series is now tied at one apiece, and that means it's going to go deep. And if you're an Oilers fan, you want that. Declan's ordering pizza. Predators versus Canucks. Preds win 4-1, and we know about the Demko thing. This is huge news if you're an Oilers fan. Even before we get to the game, and we're going to get to the game. 4-1 by Preds. Now it's a long series. No matter what happens. Did everything okay? Did you get your mushrooms?
No mushrooms. Big anti-mushroom guy. No, we had a wonderful gentleman calling in asking for the scores from last night's game. Was happy to deliver those. And I said, you know, we'd get to it as you did. A little parallel thought there.
Well,
I saw you just waffling them off as I was getting back on the mic.
George Carlin used to say, we have a partial score, 7. I thought that was pretty smart. Anyway, the Canucks lost 4-1. This Western Conference is war. I will say this. Remember the opening night lineup for the Oilers in Game 1? I want you to take that and print it off and laminate it. Laminate it. Okay? And then the final game they play this year, print that off. It'll be Game 7, the Stanley Cup Final, winning roster. Print that off and then compare the two. Switch. Okay? And there's going to be differences. And there's going to be things that you see and you go, oh, my God. And yet, somebody will step up. They always say next man up, and it's true. Somebody will star in a role that you didn't expect them to during the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Edmonton Oilers. And it'll be because of injury. We saw two things happen in Game 1. Desharnais gets low cut, like he's a logger, and then Zach Hyman takes a slash. Broberg practiced yesterday, then flew down to Bakersfield. He'll play tonight against the Ontario Reign for the Condors. But that's going to happen. It's a thing. Prepare for it. These long series and the other series are really good for the Oilers. If the Oilers win tonight, and we're going to talk to Dennis Bernstein about this, I think that Kings will be all out tonight. I think you're going to see Kopitar up against McDavid. I think you're going to see Doughty up against McDavid. And I think they're going to play like a lot. Because if you're the Kings, this is the time. You can't be, well, we've got to control the time. No. In game number one, the top line of the Oilers, they did a number on the Dano line. They really did. And I don't think you can go back to that. I printed it out on the blog today. I didn't print it out. I wrote it out. McDavid line faced the Dano line 5 minutes and 45 seconds at 5-on-5. 11-4 Corsi, 7-4 shots, 3-1 goals, 78% expected goals for the Oilers. Out of sight. Now, facing Kopitar, it was 6-2 Corsi, 1-2 shots, 0-1 goals, 86% expected goals. It's still a nightmare for Los Angeles. However, the Dano line, which, by the way, in seasons past, you know they were, you know, the monster that's under the bed for the Edmonton Oilers. Not so much in game number one. Part of the reason I think the Oilers are going to have more success is Adam Henrique and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on left wing on the top two lines, and then McDavid with Hyman, and then Fogel has stepped in on the Draisaitl line. And the third line, by the way, I looked at them this morning as well. They did pretty darn good against England Spence with the third pairing. They faced the Pierre-Luc Dubois line and did very well. 8-7 Corsi, 8-2 shots, 82% expected goals. That's McLeod with Kane and Perry. Now, I expect the Kings to play their hearts out tonight. I truly do. But the numbers and the underlying numbers are gorgeous. They're like the prettiest girl you've ever seen in your life, and you're 21 and she's 22. And your life is just starting. That's how good those numbers were. I don't know why I made her older than you. I don't understand, but I did. The bottom line for the Edmonton Oilers is if they can repeat and rinse and repeat and rinse, or as we sometimes say, rinse and repeat, they're money. They are against a very good Los Angeles Kings team. But winning tonight means even if you split on the road, you can end this in 5. And chances are somebody's going to be playing 6 or 7 in this conference. All about attrition. All about attrition. One game in, and I mean, there's a lot of pressure anyway. The Oilers have said, if you read the clippings, where the audio, the video, whatever it is, they know that this is a long series. They know it's going to be hard, but you win tonight. And now it starts to get real for the Los Angeles Kings. I wonder about the goaltending. We're going to ask Mr. Bernstein about that as well today. I wonder if they would go another direction. I don't blame Cam Talbot. But, I mean, that Leon shot was impossible. You could have a piece of plywood covering the entire net. I don't think you stopped that thing. Part of the reason LA decimated their own depth by bringing PLD in. What is spent on depth and already have the high-end edge? Imitation Tom. It's true, but You have to remember, Tom, they've marbled in some really nice young players, and like Byfield. So the Kings, you know, Rob Vollman's a friend of mine. I don't talk to him anymore because he's behind the Iron Curtain of media, and I am media. Whether media likes it or not, I am. And I would never reach out to him. It's the same with Parkati. He works for the Oilers. I would never reach out to him. I will not do that. If he calls me, I'd hang up. He'll never call me. Because these guys I'm so proud of them, but I'm so impressed by them too. They went out and they helped an NHL team build with what their knowledge was and the what they acquired. And if you look at Vollman since the Kings hired him, if you look at their procurement, especially an amateur procurement, I don't know how much credit he should get. I'm going to give him a lot because he's a friend of mine, but they have really good young talent. They truly do. And so one of the reasons they could deal for Peel, and he hasn't been what he's supposed to be. I get it. I understand. But they made the play. They made the call, and now they have to live with it. The Oilers have to beat PLD and a bunch of them. And right now, after game one, things are looking good. If they can win game two, it'll look even better. I like the lines. They're not changing the lines. No change on the lines. Awesome. Matchups, I think you'll see Kopitar and Doughty against McDavid. We'll find out. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Just so you know, in game one, if you want to contrast and compare, you know how they do that? You know when you go shopping, Declan, for glasses and you, whoa, the blue ones look nice, but look at the green ones. That's what we're doing now.
Yeah, I just found my glasses, but I get the sense. You painted a good word picture.
Sure. The Daniel line really got fed. 3-1 goals by the McDavid line. Kopitar, 0-1 goals, so LA scored well the McDavid line was on. And the Corsi still was a mess, and the expected goals were even worse, but they didn't score. So it's Vase Voss. It's like, do you want the strict nine, or would you like something else? But for the LA Kings, they have to make that decision. They have to win tonight, and they have to get better goaltending, and they have to stay out of the penalty box. For the Oilers, just keep doing what you're doing. Rock on with your bad self. That's from Rock the Boat by Hughes Corporation in 1974, just so you know. Bakersfield plays tonight. I mentioned that. There could be some recalls. We were talking about depth. I would say that it's possible we see any of the following players. And if you roll your eyes during this, I'm coming over. I am coming over there, and it's going to be ugly. And I'm not talking about you, Declan. I'm talking about the people listening on the radio. I know you roll all your eyes all the time. I get it. I understand. It's a condition. You're like roly-poly-oly over there. Philip Broberg could get recalled. We know this. I think Jack Campbell could get recalled. Stop it. I think he could get recalled. It's possible Jack Campbell gets recalled. Sam Gagne, Adam Ernie could get recalled. Not likely, but could. Lane Peterson is a guy who could get recalled if there's a lot of injuries in one area. Right shot, right wing, or at center. I don't think so, but it is possible that that happens. And then because defense is so important, I think a guy like Markus Niemelainen or maybe Ben Gleason or Cam Dineen, I don't know which guy, but if they have attrition like it can happen, I don't think Max Wanner will come here this year, but he's really good. He might be the best prospect down there. And I don't think he's too young. I don't think he'd play in an NHL playoff game at 20, but he's the future on the blue line for the Edmonton Oilers. So I think we've discussed that enough. Oilers are in a cherry, cherry spot. They truly are. If Dallas beats Vegas tonight and Edmonton beats Los Angeles, you might want to, like, I don't know, pour out a little drink. You know, your Diet Pepsi or you're a little stronger, like maybe Sprite, something like that. I have Crown Royal at home. I could. Don't threaten me. Don't make me. I'll do it. Don't you dare me. NFL draft starts tomorrow. We did a mock draft yesterday, widely and wildly well received by everyone. Everybody loved it, and especially the time we did it. And I actually had some feedback on that. And whoever picked for the Titans, according to my friend, picked wrong. So just so you know, Declan, if that was you, you were wrong.
It was me. I said we're banking on Will Levis. And then I think I picked a guard or a tackle.
Well, you are in trouble with the Titans fans out there. I think they're Titans fans.
Both of them?
Yeah. Wait a minute. They're
kidding.
Titans fans because of Warren Moon. And one of my all-time favorite quarterbacks, even though he didn't play for the Eagles, is McNair. Was McNair.
Yeah, he was great, man.
Oh,
Co-MVP in 03.
I loved him. Yeah. You remember that play where it almost went into the end zone and it didn't quite get there?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
God!
Man, the kids today don't know about Steve McNair, but they should. They should read the literature.
He was
Watch
wild.
The highlight films.
PLD is not a playmaker. However, beware, he can be in your way. I think they'll play filthy. That they have. I think that's their style, man. And that's why the orders. I mean, you say, well, you know, stay healthy. Okay, but if you're Zach Hyman, somebody slashes you across the arm, you know, you're kind of there, right? You can't transport to the bench before it happens. Man, that'd be cool. How would you measure ice time then? It would get a little crazy. Jays, I don't know what to say about the Jays. Jays are a funny team right now. They're like the Expos used to be after they traded Gary Carter. You're like, well, you know, if they win three or four in a row here, they'll be right back in it. And then you go, well, they're never going to win three or four in a row, though. They're 13-11. They're three games out. The problem is the Yankees are in first. Big whoop, and Judge is doing nothing. Once he gets hot, they're going to go places. Orioles are in second. Red Sox are in third, but they're tied with the Jays. And then the Rays are right there, too. You want to get separation. The Yankees and the Orioles have. Everybody else has not. And if you're the Jays, you just need a hot streak. It's like Yaremchuk always says, 10-12-game hot streak, and you're going to be right there.
The Blue Jays are the only team in the majors right now with a winning record that have a negative run differential, yep. And they're minus 12.
Yeah, see, that's a great stat because it tells you where they really are compared to what their record says. And what does regression do? It just goes right to the meat, or the mean, as some people call it. All right, we've got a great show today. My friend Declan will be doing Duncan with Declan at 1:40. Dennis Bernstein at 12:40. And we also have Bruce McCurdy coming up at 1 o'clock today. And on the way next, rumors. And there are a lot of them, and they're in multiple sports. Draft tomorrow night. You think we had a lot of NFL to talk about? We certainly do. And we have an Oiler item in the hockey side of things as well. This is the Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440. Brought to you by Wolf GMC Buick. Truck Month continues in April. Check it out, wolfgmcbuick.com. We say hi to Doug and Mary today. Springtime. Thoughts turn to a brand new vehicle. Yeah. Got a lot of loading and stuff to do. Declan's probably, you know, going to run out on the lease. So he's got to get everything packed up in the middle of the night. You need a really good vehicle for that.
Head down to Wolf GMC Buick.
You've never done that. Tell me you've never done that.
Packed up in the middle of the night? No, but I'll tell you, like a year ago, my lease was ending and I wasn't sure if I was going to renew it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I packed up everything just as like a, you know, just to be precautionary.
But that's a responsible human being. Yeah.
No, but I did it like pretty late in the month. And then I ended up like at the 11th hour renewing and paying a whole bunch more monthly. But, you know, needed a roof. So it is what it is.
Well, and you've got to, you know, what you should do is move back home.
I would love to. I would live at home in an instant.
Both my kids live at home and they want to move out. And I'm like, I hold them. And it's because the world is not right for you.
I know.
It's not fair to you.
100%. I calculate the money I've lost on rent over the years. And I damn near pass out every time I run the numbers.
My first job in anything where I moved away, I paid $125. It was a basement suite.
Stop it.
Clara Klontz in Wetaskiwin. My car cost me $275.
Stop it.
I'm telling you.
I'm getting mad.
Cost me $94 in oil and $24 in gas every month, but that was it. And I could drive it. Big plumes of smoke. Nobody cared.
I spend like $24 a day in bubbly waters.
Maybe that's why
I'm struggling.
All right. Now that we've done that for the commerce and for the young people of today, it's time for Rumors brought to you by Ewell. Ewell has a brand new e-commerce website. Don't sit on the bench. Get your account today at ewell.ca and win that project. EWEL.ca. I see they rewrote it because they knew I could not read the last one. And I thank the folks at Ewell for that. God love you. All right. I wanted to talk at the top a little bit about the Edmonton Oilers because we mentioned attrition. And this isn't a rumor per se, but it is going to happen. So I'm going to predict it for you. the Oilers' top nine forwards, the top three lines, are rolling. There's no changes. And it's looking good. Like, it looks really good right now. Here's the thing. Somebody's going to get nicked up. Something's going to happen. So then you go, okay, well, who's up? Dylan Holloway. That's what I want to talk about today. Look, Evander Kane and Dylan Holloway were practicing for the same job, third line left wing. Kane ended up playing. They played well. He was going to go back there. That is a move that is can happen at any time. Somebody gets nicked up. Maybe Kane moves up for an injury to another line, or maybe Kane gets hurt, and then he would sit. Dylan Holloway is poised right there on the edge of forever, waiting for that opportunity, and lots more ice time. And if you look at the Edmonton Oilers roster, one of the things they have going for them is pretty nice depth. Not even a lie. This is the most depth they've had, my feeling is, since back in the day when Craig McTavish was the coach and he just created depth. Kevin Law would give him a bunch of players and he'd go, no, I like Pisani. And so he would end up, the Oilers would, under McTavish, because he valued certain things, they always had a plethora of extra players, guys who could play because he trusted them. And often he would fade the skill guys, hello Rob Shrimp, over the guys who could play a two-way game. And did that all down the line. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm saying that's what he did. And you always have more depth when you do that. Ken Holland did it differently. He went out and got some veterans, and now the kids are pushing, but Holloway's pushing. And he's pushing Kane. And if that happens, and then they go through the playoffs with Holloway on the third line, then that informs summer activity. And I will say no more, because that, if you're not playing in the playoffs and you're healthy enough to play, but you're playing fourth line and you're making $5 million, it's a tell, like anything else, like me playing poker. If you're ever in a poker game with me, just go all in and stare at me. I'll begin to sweat, clothes will fall off, and I'll run out of the room. It's quite embarrassing. Holloway, among the fourth liners, Carrick and Janmark, were the other two in game one. He played the most. He played 943. And I think he's the most likely to move up. Janmark can move up as well. But I think they like Holloway's speed. And it may come to pass that we see Holloway playing on the third line sooner than later. He's in the lineup, so it's already a victory for him. The other thing I want to talk about with the Oilers that I didn't get to at the top of the show is this is like, how do I describe this? Perfect. That's the word. You know how one time we were in Mexico years ago and it was morning and we weren't hungry, but we wanted something. So the waiter said, what about our hot chocolate? It's excellent hot chocolate. We make it a very special way. And we said, sure. It was the best hot chocolate I've ever had in my life. It had milk in it. It had, I don't know what it had in it, but it was so good. We had hot chocolate every morning after that until we left. That's how it was, perfect. You know, you think, well, I got to eat something, but hot chocolate for breakfast, giddy up. All right. So here is the Edmonton Oilers roster deployment in game one that is like that hot chocolate we had for breakfast in Cancun, what would have been 35 years ago. I still remember how good it was. The top 5-on-5 defensemen in terms of time on ice in game number one was Cody Ceci, 18:30. Darnell Nurse, 17:55. Matthias Ekholm, 16:58. Evan Bouchard, 16:52. You see how close they are? A couple of minutes at the most. Shift here or there. Bouchard might have played on the power play. And so they put Ceci out there for the next shift. Now, here's the kicker. Those two are between 17 and 18 and a half minutes. Very close. Brett Kulak, 15:43. Vincent Desharnais, 15:16. And he even, you know, I think he missed a couple of shifts at least because of the apparent injury on the low, low hit. So these guys, these cats are basically 3 minutes apart, 1 through 6. What does that tell you? It tells you that they are not playing long shifts and they are rotating equally. Man, that's music. Why? Because nobody's getting overplayed. Nobody's having to play deep, heavy minutes. They're all just rolling because guess what? It's a long spring, and we're not going to overdo it. Now, Drew Doughty, 20-28 at 5-on-5 during game one. 20-28. You see that Doughty's not a young man. I know it's just a couple of minutes or three, depending upon who you're looking at. It is a big deal. It is a very, very big deal. And you can get as mad at CC as you want. The stick exploded. And sure, he should have knocked it into the corner, but you know what? That it's the mind races. He didn't, you know, freeze. He tried to do something. Didn't work. Didn't cost him the game. You got to move on. I know everybody likes to make fun of things that are mistakes, and hockey is about mistakes. But for me, there's already a difference in this series in regard to deployment and how much the top players are playing in Los Angeles. And it's only 2 minutes and 5-on-5 in game one. But as time goes on, that will become more and more of an issue. There's some funny things happening in other series, too, in this regard. Nathan McKinnon's playing 16:40 a night at 5-on-5 already in these playoffs. He's playing 23:34 a game so far in these playoffs. It comes. I don't care how young you are, that's a lot. And you're getting beaten, slashed, hacked. Giddy up. Sam Bennett out 1 week with an upper body injury. The Panthers are up 2 Cobb over Tampa Bay. In the second period last night, he left holding his wrist, and it's an issue. We don't know for sure, or at least I don't. The latest information I have is not certain that William Nylander plays tonight. That is a big deal for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Brett Pesce is out for the remainder of the first round. That's a big loss for the Carolina Hurricanes. He's the number one target I have for the Oilers next summer. This summer. Whatever the summer is. The one that's coming up. 2024. Love to get him. No, I don't make the decisions. But I think if the Oilers are smart, and they are, they would at least knock on the door of Mr. Pesce. Whether he answers or not, I have no idea. The Lions have signed a right tackle to a massive deal. Can you talk to me about that and why it's such a big, big contract?
Yeah, Penei Sewell, he is, I would say, one of the best tackles in the game. His draft stock was a little bit questioned because he went right before Jaylen Waddle. Mm-hmm. Or it might have been Jamar Chase. I can't remember. But he went right before a high-profile wide receiver. Now that I think about it, I think it might have been Jamar Chase. Regardless, it was questioned at the time because obviously, you know, it's not a glory position, but he is far and away one of the best tackles in the game. He just got $120 million. He deserves all of it. He didn't resurrect Jared Goff's career. I'm not going to say that by any stretch of the imagination, but he gave Jared Goff a lot of time to make a lot of plays. He is well worth the money. Detroit has, listen, they got a lot of pieces, man. They also just gave Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think $110 million. Penei Sewell gets $120 million here. Both of them far and away deserve the money they got. He is a game changer on that offensive line. One of the best tackles. And one thing I really like about Penei Sewell is he's really, really good with his hands. Like, a lot of edge rushers can beat you with speed. You just kind of live with that. But the edge rushers who hand battle you, they can't do that against Penei Sewell. He is incredibly quick with his hands. Good footwork. Great tackle. Great signing by the Lions, who are moving in the right direction for maybe the first time ever.
He speaks well of you, too. So it's really a respect thing all around.
He's a great player, man. Great player.
Major League Baseball, I'm back in baseball fantasy after being out for 25 years. And I will tell you this. Something has changed. All the sport is now is reading on injured pitchers. That's all it is. You either are absolutely, absolutely crushed that your pitcher got hurt and is out for like 7 years or 2 months. And then it's not glee, but you're like, okay, well, at least that happened about somebody else's pitcher. Blake Snell on the injured list due to adductor strain. Well, It happens all the time, every day. Every day, somewhere. Every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings, and a starting pitcher hurts himself. It's I didn't make it up. It's true. The Toronto Raptors have to make a decision on a Bruce Brown. This happens to every NBA team. It's the option decision. Is that something that is going to hold some weight for the Raptors? Is it something that they're maybe going to do, not do? And is there any other option player out there that's a big deal?
Well, it's something you think about. I don't know where their heads are at. Like, they're in a position where they may have a piece, but what's it going to look like around him? I don't know. I don't know. They're in a weird spot.
A lot of money.
Like, it's a lot of money, and they have their guy, and, you know, moving forward, he's going to be the guy. The question is going to become, and I touched on this, is he going to be a guy that is just going to put up all-star numbers, but you're winning 30 games a year, or is he going to be a guy that can contribute to winning basketball? I think they need to figure out that first, and need to figure out that very quickly before they make any other big decisions.
That's a very astute, well-thought-out statement that you made, and I get it totally, even though I don't know the NBA that well.
I made it up, but thank you.
You're trying to build a championship team, and you don't know if your lead dog is good enough.
Like, I mean this with all due respect. I know the Raptors have a lot of fans here, but the Raptors are still, like, they're a small market team in the NBA by all, you know, points and considerations. Like, they don't play many nationally televised games. They're not a huge free agent market because a lot of guys don't want to play in Canada, and, you know, they have this thing that Canada's too cold or something. But really, like, Toronto is thought of as a small market team in the NBA. So what they need to do to attract, one, nationally televised game, and two, free agents, is winning basketball. Like, you can't sell them on the city the way, like, Toronto may be an attraction for us. We may think of it as a destination spot, but it just isn't in the NBA. You need to win games. You need to have a winning culture. Otherwise, it's going to be a whole lot worse before it gets better.
So. Is it the 401? Are people afraid of it that they don't want to go there? Toronto's a beautiful city.
Yeah, Toronto's a great city, but, like, on it, it's thought of as a small market team, man. It's up in Canada. Like, it's just different. I don't know. Like, I would love to play in Toronto, obviously, but NBA players have a real problem with it. This isn't just me, you know, spewing. Like, you'll see old retired players come out and say, like, oh, I would never dream of playing in Toronto. And, like, you'll hear guys who say they got big offers from Toronto and they didn't even think about going. And you see Kawhi Leonard, who was there for one season, never even an iota of thinking of re-signing, even though he won a championship there. Like, players just don't want to be there. So, you know, it's tough. You got to create a winning culture to draw those guys in.
Well, you really summed this up well.
I mumbled a little bit, but I think I got my point across.
No, you did. Pesci hates Canada, Al. Well, how does anybody know that? Low Tide, this is what we call a team. We've been waiting for the depth and waiting to have a team that rolls into the playoffs like they are right now. Love it! From Dickie. Dickie, you're not alone. Get a lot of comments like that. I think what happened was the LA Kings came in, Oiler fans girded their loins like you do, and the expectation was a tougher game in game number one than they got. And so fans are like, oh my God. But I'm just saying to you, this is a really big game tonight. But don't get mad at them if they don't lose or if they don't win, because it's possible the Oilers play well and still lose. It is possible. You can do everything right and something goes in on somebody's, you know, another stick explodes. Stuff happens. Well, I'm not going to read that about Angels getting set on fire when the mousetrap snaps. I'm not reading that about why this person knows that Pesci hates Canada. Brett Pesci is a free agent. The Oilers' money spends like everybody else. Man, the stuff that gets thrown around. Holy. Okay, on the way, got a busy show. Dennis Bernstein on the way from the fourth period. Bruce McCurdy at 1 o'clock. Duncan with Declan at 1:40. And your comments, which are alive with the sound of music, are on the way as well. This is the Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440, brought to you by Wolf GMC Buick. Truck Month continues in April. WolfGMCBuick.com. That song, by the way, was written by Alice Cooper after a bunch of his mom's friends from church went to see him live on stage, and they were unhappy with... Like, I mean, you know, he sang songs like Dead Babies and Sick Things, so I can see that, but he wasn't really, that wasn't his target audience, Declan. So, there you go. I just always found that a funny reaction to it. All right. Now we're joined by Dennis Bernstein from the Fourth Period to talk about the Los Angeles Kings and game number two coming up. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Low Tide. Great being on the show.
Well, let me ask you, because I was looking at Puckpedia and Cap Friendly and all those good things, and it was difficult for me to kind of ascertain the depth chart, because they had, as an example, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Grunstrom, and Byfield listed as the fourth line. And lo and behold, after the game at 5-on-5, Byfield led the team with 15-10, PLD at 14-04. So I know they're trying to spread out the offense or the quality of players. They have a deep team, but it was a little confusing. And I do wonder if we'll see the same alignment tonight, and maybe the mix and match with the Kopitar and the Dano line will change a little too.
Here's a pro tip. Don't pay attention to the pregame line, what shows on the pregame lines, or even in the warm-up. Because last game, they had Fiala with Lizotte and Lewis, and they started, and Jim Hiller started with Fiala, Byfield, and Dubois. So the one thing that Jim Hiller is willing to do, Low Tide, is switch up his line combinations. Not so much the pairings. The defensive pairings will stay the same. I think you watch the first 5 to 10 minutes, how the game flows, and Jim makes adjustments, and he's welcome to do it. So, yeah, the depth charts that you look on, these different sites, they're meaningless when it comes to Jim Hiller and the way he deploys his lines.
So they did run the Dano line quite a bit against McDavid, also ran Kopitar. So I'm wondering, because he did talk about, you know, we got to figure out, you know, guys who can play, and he does mix and match. Any thoughts on who he might? I think Doughty's going to be out there a lot against McDavid. But in terms of forwards, Do you think it'll be Kopitar?
No, I think it'll be Dano because of the speed factor. Okay. You know, I do love Kopi. He's a sulky winner, but he's better suited to defend Leon, without question, because of the speed and the size. It's just a mismatch. As great as Kopi is defensively, the speed factor of Connor that he brings to the ice, it's too much of a mismatch. So I think that you'll see that. Now, if it's not working, you see what you saw where it's 4-0 in the, you know, in the first second period, you might see it again. But I think to start, I think his first wish, and I think he would see it in Los Angeles in 3 and 4, would be Dano against McDavid and Kopitar against Leon Draisaitl.
And then they've got two really good pairings, so they can mix and match, right? The Doughty pairing is going to play a lot, but the other pairings with Gavrikov is good as well. Kings have to stay out of the penalty box. We know this. Yeah. They also need to play that rugged physical game, because I do think it works at least a little bit against the Oilers. How do they, and the referees obviously have an impact on what is called, how do they sort of walk that tightrope of being rugged and physical and not getting into the penalty box? Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't be stupid. Like the Dubois penalty. Now, look, I joked. I tweeted on Monday night, Dubois got a penalty for hitting McDavid. Oh, no, it was interference. Connor was almost off the, you know, almost off the ice, but you can't hit Connor when he's just getting off the ice. And, of course, the end of the second period, hold tight, that Trevor Moore has been great for the Kings. He's a smart player. That was a dumb penalty he took against Desharnais. You don't take that penalty. You go to the room. You're thinking, okay, we got a shot at 4-2. Right now, you take that penalty, you go to the room thinking, all right, are they going to get another one? They did, 5-2. So you got to be smart about it. And the one thing about the physicality, Lieutenant, I don't know what they're doing with respect to the score sheets here, but when you go back to game one score sheet, they had the Kings for 65 hits. Like, that's not the LA Kings. I think around the league, the hitting, at least the way it's being recorded, is really, really high. So you got to be time and place, opportunistic. You got to be able to push back. You got to be better in front of your net. The physicality has to come in front of the net because, as an example, Zach's hat trick goal. He's standing by himself in front of the net. And I know they play a 1-2-1 diamond, but you got to get on Zach. Like, you know where Zach's going to go. Like, he's going to go to the crease on a power play, right? So the physicality in front of that's going to be important, and the pushback's going to be important. But more so than the physicality, they have to be able to deploy their 1-3-1. Yeah. And they didn't all game. Like they were, the Oilers were too fast in the neutral zone. You saw so many odd man rushes. I think 8 or 9 odd man rushes for the Oilers. That just simply can't happen. Or we're going to have a repeat of game one.
Dennis Bernstein, our guest from the fourth period. Okay, let me ask you this, because the sense I get is that the Kings are most of number one. They score the first goal, but they're most effective when they can suppress the outlet pass. Put a lot of pressure on Bouchard and CeCe and whomever. The puck goes in the corner and they're on him like a fly on stink. And for the Oilers were doing a pretty good job in game one of getting that to happen. I'm not saying they did all the time. Let's review. Yeah. It was 4-2 after two. It was a game. But that's got to be a part of their game, right? Getting in there and making the defensemen on the Edmonton side make mistakes.
Yeah, I think you want to, if you're Kings and you're Jim Hill, you want to attack the bottom four defensemen. Because the top pair with Bouchard and Ekholm, it's hard to penetrate, even though, you know, Evans is an offensive player, but, you know, Matthias is a great defender. So I think that's the opportunity to go after CeCe, to go after Vinny Desharnais, and, you know, with the forecheck and try to get turnovers in the offensive zone and create opportunities in front of Stuart Skinner, which they didn't really create. You know, look, I think the four goals are misleading, Lotar, because the last two goals were just fluke goals. Right, I mean, so it was really like a 5-2, 6-2 game, but that would be their strategy, to get possession in the offensive zone, put pressure on the bottom four defensemen, go to the net, try to get opportunities, get Byfield and Dubois, who are the bigger forwards on the team, in front of Stuart Skinner to create traffic and possibly get, you know, goal mouth goals like the Oilers have been doing, did in game one.
So it's been confirmed by both coaches that they're going to let it ride with the lineups. That means, for instance, Cam Talbot is going to be starting. Yes. I don't blame – like the Leon Draisaitl goal on the fifth goal, the early third period goal, it was a gorgeous shot. I don't know how you stop that.
Oh,
but but they do have David Rittich, who has actually played well against the Oilers. Do you see a possibility that we see Rittich by the end of this series?
Yeah, I asked Jim Hiller about the choice. Here's the thing. He absolved Cam Talbot of game one because the defense in front of him was so poor. It really was. He said the forwards didn't help the defense. The defense didn't help the goaltender. So, but I will say this, Lotai, shorter leash. If it's 2-0 after one and there are two bad goals, could you see David Rittich? Now, here's the thing about Rittich. Here's the thing about the Kings goaltending. They're system goaltenders, like system quarterbacks in football. They are not made to have 45 saves. Like the Oilers had 45 shots in game one. Like then it's not Hellebuck. It's not Demko. It's not Bobrovsky and them. They have to limit chances. They need 25 to 30 shots in a game. So if it's Rittich and they get 42 shots on him, you're probably going to have the same outcome. Here's the thing about Rittich. Yes, his numbers are equal to Cam Talbot, but he's played 3 games in the last month, one against San Jose and one against Anaheim. I don't think that's the same quality of offense that he would face tonight. So I think that you may see him if it goes south early for Cam, but I think Jim's still confident that if the defense plays in better in front of Cam Talbot, they have a shot to win tonight.
That's very good information. I notice across the league, everything seems to be getting tied up 1-1. The Oilers have a chance to go 2-0 as they head back to the coast, but I wonder like everybody always says, well, it's do or die. I never believe that because you're not out of it until you lose a game at home. I think, from the Kings' point of view, they've been there. They've been in series against Edmonton. How important is winning game two in your opinion for Los Angeles?
It depends what cliche you want to buy, right? Here's the thing: the Kings have played. Kings and the Oilers have played 5 times this year, and that was the worst performance in game 5. So if you look at progression or regression with respect to the Kings. They've played worse by game 5. The games in the regular season, look, I picked the Oilers in 6. I'll be transparent because they were a better team, but they were marginally better. It wasn't like 4 or 5 game series I was predicting, but this game was the worst performance. I'll give Chris Knobloch and the staff credit. They really did a great scouting job in game 1. They were ready. They knew how to attack the Kings. They got them off their game. They got time and space in the neutral zone. So I think they should treat this like a game 7. You could say, yeah, we can go home, get 2 at home, but the last time I checked, when did the last series, they won game 6 in Los Angeles. The Oilers aren't afraid to come to Los Angeles to win a game. I think based on the performance in game 1 and the way this series has been going regular season and game 1, they really need to play this like a game 7 because I can't see the way the Kings are playing. If we have a repeat performance tonight, low tide, like you're going to tell me then the Kings are going to go home and win 4 out of 5 against this team?
No.
I don't think so. It's not going to look good. So, look, if they play a close game, that'll give them some hope. If we have a repeat performance like game 1, it could be let's put it this way. I'm from Los Angeles. I may not be coming back for game five if it's another repeat of game one.
We are much smarter now than we were a few minutes ago, and it's because of you. Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure. Low tide. Thanks for the time.
All right. There you go. That was a great interview. I was along for the ride. Great information from Dennis Bernstein, fourth period. That stuff about Rittich and, you know, he ordinarily you wouldn't get that kind of comment in regard to the Kings and, you know, how well the Oilers played. I'm not saying that people are dishonest. I'm saying that issues are framed. He was very, very frank and very clear. I really enjoyed his clarity. You got to be clear with me because I'll go off on a tangent on you. That's why what Declan says is so important to this show. You can send me off on a wild goose chase. How was your first hour? Did you get your typing in?
A little bit of typing in. A little bit of work on the side here. I think it was a pretty good first hour.
Would you like to share with the class what you brought for lunch today?
Oh, Matt, you really want to know?
Yep.
All right, I brought ground beef and vegetables.
That's okay, like what did you course. Salt the ground beef? Or?
It has some all-purpose seasoning on it, yeah.
Okay, sure.
I brought two pears.
Okay.
A Fiber One granola bar and a peanut butter sandwich.
Nothing wrong with that. I think you hit all the food groups.
Thanks. I don't have my glass of milk or whatever, but, you know, other than that, I think I'm doing okay.
You need some mood juice, but other than that, you've done very well.
And then for anyone who's wondering, the veg, it's like broccoli, edamame.
And how many different...
Some type of grain is in there. I don't know what it is, but
okay,
it's pretty
so
good.
So how many dips will that be? Is that like two little meals or one big meal or...
Well, like, as you know, I don't really, well, actually, you probably don't know this. I don't really eat breakfast, but I'm here for, you know, 8 hour day and then six straight between this and the Gregor show. So I'll space it out. Like, I'll generally have my sandwich right after we get done at like 2:00 and then I'll have my pears at like, you know, 3:00, 4:00, granola bar if I get hungry, then I'll have like my main course at 5:00.
Okay. And then you're done for the day.
Yeah. Then I'll have dinner at like 9 p.m. usually.
Okay. And would it be a quick meal at 9:00?
It's like same size, I would say, but I'll make something. Like, I'll get some, you know, chicken and rice and broccoli or whatever and
very
throw
nice.
Some together.
I think you're a catch.
I think that
your girlfriend's pretty lucky if you are able to prepare all of that.
I always offer to cook and we never end up doing it.
Do you have Tupperware and such?
Oh, I got so much. Oh my goodness, Tide. I got so much Tupperware. Like, it falls out of my cupboards and I literally got mad the other day. I slammed my cupboard shut and I was like, I'm just going to throw half this away. Because I have so much Tupperware, I don't know what to do with it.
You might be the perfect modern guy.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you.
If you wore the glasses, I think people would recognize it. Okay, Bruce McCurdy on the way. We also have Duncan with Declan in hour two. Low down with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's time for an update.
This is a Sports 1440 update.
And for your Sports 1440 update, brought to you by... your Alberta GMC dealers. Get up to $6,500 cash purchase credit on a 2024 Sierra 1500 Denali Ultimate during Truck Month. See more at gmcoffers.ca. Game day for the Edmonton Oilers as they look to take a 2-0 series lead against the Los Angeles Kings. Puck drop for that goes at 8 down at Rogers Place. Also in the league tonight, Vegas is in Dallas in game 2 of that series. Puck drop for that one at 7:30. Vegas leads the series 1-0. And the early game tonight, game 3 of the Bruins and Maple Leafs. That one goes in Toronto at 5 o'clock. Series tied 1-1. A couple of scores around the NHL playoffs, if you missed them from yesterday, was the Rangers over the Capitals 4-3 to take a 2-0 series lead. The Panthers 3-2 in overtime over the Lightning, also to go up 2-0. Avs evening the series against the Jets in a 5-2 victory. And the Preds evening the series against the Vancouver Canucks without Thatcher Demko 4-1. Just two games in the NBA tonight. Miami on the road in Boston to take on the Celtics. Boston leads that series 1-0. Then the 7:30 tip-off, the Pelicans in OKC to take on the Thunder. OKC leads that series 1-0. MLB action from around the league. Right now, Cardinals currently up 2-1 on the Diamondbacks in the top of the 7th. Later today, we have the Mets and Giants at 1:45, the Orioles and the Angels just after 2, the Red Sox in Cleveland to take on the Guardians at 4, and the Blue Jays in Kansas City to finish off their series with the Royals at 5:40. News around the NHL is Brett Pesce's injury is significant and he is expected to miss time per sources. According to Sheldon Keefe, William Nylander is a game-time call for Game 3. Other news in the sporting world, the Detroit Lions have inked Amon-Ra St. Brown to a $110 million deal and Penei Sewell to a $120 million deal, and the Pittsburgh Steelers will not be picking up the fifth-year option on quarterback Justin Fields, who they just recently acquired in a trade. Hour 2 of the Lowdown with Low Tide is coming up next. I'm Declan Kruger, and this has been a Sports 1440 Update.